This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The dramatic events involving Texas Child Protective Services and the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints raise a series of questions about the line between what's tolerable and what isn't, about the extent of religious freedom, and about the role of the state. Last week, the Texas State Supreme Court ruled that Child Protective Services exceeded its authority when it seized more than 400 children from the polygamous groups Yearning for Zion Ranch in El Dorado. And starting yesterday, parents began picking up children from foster homes scattered across much of the state. What happens to the investigations into sexual abuse of the underage girls? What happens now to the kids who return to the ranch? Later in the program, the confessions of a baseball player who charged the mound to ignite a bench-clearing brawl. But first, did Child Protective Services go too far in Texas? Was the agency right to intervene? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. It's at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with NPR's Wade Goodwin, who's been covering this case. He's with us now by phone from outside the Yearning for Zion Ranch in El Dorado. And nice to have you on the program, Wade.
My pleasure.
And what's going on at the ranch today?
Well, you know, a Mercedes SUV just drove up outside the gates and stopped there for a minute to have a word with journalists. I think it's some of the members of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who are returning back to the ranch after picking up their children. You know, the children are all over the state, so if you have quite a few children, it's taking some time to pick them up from the various points around Texas where they've been kept. And slowly but surely, some have started to come back, although the FLDS has rented homes around the state and bought some homes around the state. And I think that although many would like to come back, they're going to lay low, I think, until most of the media have left.
And as I understand it, when the parents go to pick up their kids, they're required to provide identity and fingerprints.
Right. Part of the Judge Barbara Walters' orders was to try to connect the children back to the parents. The state has struggled to pair the children up with their parents, who belongs to whom. And so they have to fingerprint, they have to have the photographs taken of themselves with the children, and they have to identify who the parents are. All of this is part of Texas's ongoing search to find out which children belong to which parents. And I think this is not just part of the civil suit, not just part of Texas Child Protective Services investigation. I think this may be used in the Texas Rangers criminal investigation as well.
And DNA evidence, I gather, is being returned to the state later this week.
Some DNA evidence has already been returned. I think we expect the rest by Friday. And I think probably most of the children will have been picked up from state custody by the end of today. If not today, then by early tomorrow. And I think round one of the state versus the FLDS will be over.
And are all of the children going home?
All of the children are going home. Even the underage pregnant mothers and the underage pregnant teens and the underage mothers, they're all going home. That's not to say that they're going to necessarily stay home. I think that what's going to happen now is Child Protective Services will proceed as it usually does, bringing individual charges and individual cases. And so it's no guarantee that just because these temporary orders were vacated that new orders won't be entered.
And all of the parents also had to agree to attend parenting classes.
Right. I mean, that's standard operating procedure. I mean, given the group's feelings about the state, I just wonder how successful parenting classes might be. Not that the mothers and fathers won't attend, not that they won't be respectful, but frankly, they view outsiders as Gentiles, as Babylonians. I expect them to be very distrustful of what they're going to be taught. I'm not sure what the state of Texas hopes to achieve with that order.
And I understand that yesterday an elder from the FLDS church said that in the future the church would not condone unions involving minors.
Right. I think that's a change. That's an announcement that will probably be welcomed by the state. FLDS, although it was not unheard of, the practice of marrying underage teens to older men really got started with Warren Jeffs' father, Rulon Jeffs, in earnest. Not that it never happened before. Yes, it did. But Rulon Jeffs and then Warren Jeffs kind of took that practice up a notch. And I don't think many members of the FLDS will feel like this is a blow against them if they go back to having plural marriages between older young women and older men.
And they said that without acknowledging that such unions had happened in the past, or at least not openly acknowledging.
Well, he did say, let's not blame, you know, the many for the mistakes of a few, which I would say is a tacit acknowledgement mistakes were made, as you might say.
Will Child Protective Services still have access to see these children to make sure that they're okay?
Yes, they have access from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. There's no limit on the access, and I expect Child Protective Services is going to be very involved back at the ranch. One lawyer for one young woman, the daughter of Warren Jeffs, asked that orders be entered for her protection. There was hints that she might have been sexually abused. So, I mean, we are far from over. Although the children are going back today, we are still very much in the middle of this process.
Wade Goodwin, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
NPR's Wade Goodwin covering the FLDS case, and he joined us by phone from outside the Yearning for Zion Ranch in El Dorado, Texas. And just again, a reminder, the FLDS has no connection with the mainstream Mormon church. Joining us now is Jackie Carter. She's the executive director of the High Sky Children's Ranch in Midland, Texas, which housed 15 girls from the FLDS compound in El Dorado. And she joins us now by cell phone from Midland, Texas. And it's good of you to be with us today.
Thank you.
And have the girls that you were housing, have they been released back to their parents?
All but a couple, and they're going this afternoon.
And how old were they?
They were from 11 to 17.
And give us an idea. What were they like?
Well, at first they were a little reserved and acted very mature. They relaxed as they came to trust us, and they were very delightful. I truly enjoyed meeting them and getting to know them.
And you got to know them, what, for almost a couple of months?
Yes, yes. They lived together in one home, and it was a wonderful opportunity.
And what kind of activities did they participate in while they were in your care?
Well, we tried to honor their culture, and we bought sewing machines, and they all made their clothing, made dresses. We provided a gardening area for them, and they were very good at baking and cooking, I have to say. So they were very skilled and very knowledgeable.
And were they in school? Were they getting classes of any sort?
Actually, we had the Midland Public School come and do an assessment, and they were going to go to summer school if the plan had been for them to remain. But all of them were very smart and could read and had great many skills.
And when you talked to them about the world around them, did they seem aware of what was going on?
To some extent. Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate a little, if you would?
Well, really, they did not want to talk about the world as such. They were mostly concerned with their situation, and we understood that. That was a very difficult situation for them to be removed from their families, and that was their main concern for the time that they were with us, though they did relax and have some fun and develop some relationships.
And when you said you honored their culture, did they watch television, look at a computer, anything like that?
No, no. They do not watch television. We had everything removed from the home that they were not interested in. They sang and listened to sermons, did their daily routine. They did play outside. We have a gymnasium, and they played ball and played in the water. But they did not watch TV or do computer games.
And when you said they were reading the Bible, the newspaper, what?
Well, no. Actually, they had some of their materials that they read and listened to on tape.
Listened to on tape. So they had tape recorders or...
Actually, iPods.
iPods. Okay. Well, there's a bit of the modern world that might have
well,
come as some of the
surprise. Very knowledgeable of the modern world and technically, so...
So they know of what computers are and that sort of thing. They just
probably
don't have Facebook pages.
Yes.
I understand their departure. It must have been a sad one for you in some ways.
It was for us. I think they were very happy to go home. But, yes, they gave us hugs. They wanted the picture taken with us. They said they would come and see us. Their parents were very polite and nice. And I was very sad to see them go. And it's a hard day.
It's a hard day. And I expect, by tomorrow, probably all of them will be gone.
Yes. By this afternoon, they will all be gone.
By this afternoon. So there's this process is still continuing. Were the parents resentful of the process at all, where they have to provide ID and fingerprints and that sort of thing?
No, they were actually very polite, very kind and nice, thanked my staff and the CPS workers for their time and their help. Very pleasant.
And the kids were thrilled to be back with their parents?
Oh, yes. They were very excited. Mostly mothers showed up, and they were thrilled to see their mothers. Of course, parents have been visiting every day since the girls were placed.
So they have maintained contact with their families.
Yes, yes.
Well, Jackie Carter, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jackie Carter, executive director of the High Sky Children's Ranch in Midland, Texas, where they housed 15 girls from the FLDS compound in El Dorado. She joined us by phone today from Midland, Texas. We're talking about the fallout from the dramatic showdown between Texas Child Protective Services and the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For the state, for the religious group, and especially for the kids, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The families of a polygamous group in Texas are being reunited after a West Texas judge ordered all of the children taken into Child Protective Services, more than 400, released from state custody and returned to their parents. We've been talking to people who house the children this hour and looking at the repercussions for the children, for their parents, for the religious sect, and for the investigation. But did Child Protective Services go too far in Texas? Was the agency right to intervene? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We got this email from Rayanne in Gold River, California. Child Protective Services, she wrote, made the right call by removing the children from the ranch. The fact that the children are being returned to the parents does not indicate that the removal of the children was a mistake, nor does it mean that the cases with the agency are rendered inactive. Child Protective Services acted with the best interests of the children in mind, not the civil liberties of their parents, and that's their job. Also with us on the line is Adam. Adam's calling us from San Antonio in Texas.
Yes, hi, Neil.
Adam, go ahead, please.
Hi, I just wanted to say I think that it was a definite mistake by CPS. I think it's a disturbing misuse of state power. I think that they looked at this case as one single case and looked at these people as one entity rather than looking at them individually. And I think the fact that they were returned indicates that there wasn't that much there that they found to substantiate their claim that all these children were being abused. I kind of liken it to... You know, they find out one kid on a particular block is being abused, and they round up every kid on the block. I don't think that they, thought it through, and I think it was a knee-jerk reaction that, you know, frankly is sort of common here in the state of Texas. You know, it harkens back to the Branch Davidians here in Waco.
Well, obviously, that was on a federal basis, not the state. But so you think the state should have proceeded on a case-by-case basis and not assumed that all of the children were at risk?
Absolutely. Either that or, you know, it just feels like that when they got the call from the one 16-year-old girl, I believe it was very shortly after that that these children were taken from their parents. And I understand that they're acting in the best interest of the children, but I think it may have really damaged those kids. I know if I would have been taken from my parents at that age, it would have been a very scarring situation.
Well, Adam, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks, Neil.
Joining us now is Scott McCowan. He's a retired state district judge who presided over child welfare cases in Texas. He's currently director for the Center for Public Policy Priorities and joins us from the studios of Digital Domain in Austin. And it's very good of you to be with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And as I understand it, the case that the Child Protective Services argued to the courts was that all of the underage, the minor girls, were at risk of sex abuse, not just the ones who were pregnant, and that the boys, they argued, were being groomed to be perpetrators, and that was their logic.
I think you've stated that well, and the problem from the point of view of going forward, if I can kind of divide it into two, there was just a practical problem of biting off more than they could chew. There was not enough resources for a thorough investigation, not enough time done on a thorough investigation, and not a strong enough record then presented to the court. So you had the kind of the time problem and the resource problem, in addition to the legal problem of whether the legal theory, even if you had all the time and money in the world to investigate it, would have substantiated their position.
So the court held that they didn't have they didn't present evidence of abuse in most of the cases.
Well, not quite. The court didn't say they didn't present evidence of abuse or danger. What the court said was that there wasn't an immediate danger justifying the removal of the children. But the court found reasons to be concerned and sufficient evidence for the trial judge to enter some orders that I think your reporter did a pretty good job of outlining so that investigations and further information could be gathered going forward.
And that's the everybody has to continue to cooperate with Child Protective Services and the criminal investigation as well. Again, provide identity information when they come and pick up the children and provide access, as I understand it, for both medical and psychological examinations during the day.
If the department requests, there would be interviews of the child, visits to the home, medical, psychological, or psychiatric examinations. In addition, the court ordered that any adults who live in the household with the child have to be identified and that children cannot be taken out of the state of Texas. And in fact, if they're going to travel more than 100 miles from their designated residence, that they have to give 48 hours notice.
And as I understand it, the age of consent for marriage in Texas is 16, is that right?
The age at which a parent can consent to a minor being married is 16.
So they are just monitoring children, presumably girls for the most part, below the age of 16.
Well, not quite. You would also monitor whether girls who were 16 or older were being married into a polygamous marriage, because a parent could not consent to somebody who's 16 being married into a plural marriage.
Because it would not be, why not?
Well, because plural marriage, or bigamy as the legal term, is a felony in the state of Texas. It's a second degree felony punishable by 20 years if you are 16 or older, and it's a first degree felony if you're under the age of 16. And the offense is committed by everybody who enters into the marriage, both the men and the women. So you couldn't legally consent to your 16-year-old daughter entering into a plural marriage.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Kristen. Kristen with us from Portland, Oregon.
Yes, I have a question as to what good arguments the parents' attorneys can make for the future, considering that all of the children were returned because there was an immediate danger to each child. I'm just assuming that Texas CPS might encounter future legal complications. You know, they've been collecting evidence since the children have been in custody. Are there any roadblocks that the parents' attorneys can throw up?
Scott McCallum?
Well, I think the question is a really good one, which is, where do you go from here? What's the goal? I mean, if in fact the sect is going to stop having plural marriages with kids that are underage, then the question becomes whether there's anything else to investigate, except, of course, for the criminal investigations that might go forward for those children who've been victimized in the past.
And if you say plural marriage or bigamy, I think isn't there a distinction between plural marriage and bigamy? If you have consenting adults, everybody's aware of what's going on. Bigamy, as I understand it, involves an element of fraud in it, where somebody's not telling somebody what's going on here.
No, I don't think that's correct. Texas went back in 2005 and revised its bigamy statute with a specific aim of reaching the practice of polygamy. Now, what it did was it made it a first-degree felony if you're under 16 and a second-degree felony if you're over 16. So it's clearly a felony. Now, whether that means that you're endangering children when you enter into it is a separate question.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call, Kristen.
Thank you so much.
Dan Adams joins us now. He's president and CEO of Cal Farley's Boys Ranch in Amarillo, Texas. So they housed 72 boys from the FLDS compound in El Dorado, and he's with us by phone from Amarillo, Texas. Nice to have you today on Talk of the Nation. Excuse me, Mr. Adams? We apparently lost contact with him. We'll try to get him back. In the meantime, we'll continue our conversation with Scott McCowan, a retired state district judge who presided over Child Protective Services cases in Texas. And let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Robert. Robert with us from East China in Michigan.
Yes. My wife and I were investigated by the foster care system, and the allegations that were brought against us was all false, and it just put our family through some rough times, and I think they overstepped their boundaries when they did it, and it's a shame that these families have gone through this, especially their kids.
So you feel sorry for the people who have had to go through this for a couple of months now?
Of course, of course.
And it looks like, as we were hearing from Wade Goodwin, this was just round one, the thing is going to continue.
Well, think about these kids that are taken away from the families, and they don't know where their parents were, and they're just taken away and said, see you later, and they're spread all around, the families are split up. I mean, what do you think about these kids, and what's the future that holds for them, and they're going to have some mental issues that we won't even know what will happen to them.
Mm. Well, Jackie Carter, who's had some of the girls at her place in Midland, Texas, said the parents, most of the parents visited every day, so evidently they weren't completely cut off.
Well, I mean, visiting and being home with them and being safe with them and being pulled from the family is totally different just from saying, yeah, I'm visiting my kids every day. I mean, that's...
No, I understand.
Sir.
Yeah. Okay, Robert. Thanks very much.
Neil, could I comment that just to put one thing in context is that Texas actually has a very low rate of intervention in homes compared to other states. We have over 6 million children in the state of Texas and only remove at this point roughly 15,000 a year, less than 0.25%. So I just want to point out that CPS is working with a very small number of kids and is often caught in this public whiplash between if you don't intervene and children are seriously hurt, you're blamed. If you do intervene and people's sense of family integrity is offended, you're blamed. And it's a very difficult job to draw that line, but I do want to point out that statistically, Texas has a very low rate of intervention.
Well, I think one of the questions that people have, like our last caller, was the extremity of this action. Removing all of the kids, could not the Child Protective Services have gone for some order pretty much like the one they have now, where they could come in and talk to the kids at the FLDS ranch?
Well, the problem with the order that they have now in terms of an investigation is that it's very difficult to get children to disclose any sort of information about the family if they're living with the family. And indeed, in this case, where you had these young pregnant women, or girls really, and you've taken them out of the compound and now you've put them back, they won't have any sense that they can make disclosures and expect the state to provide protection. So I actually think it's going to be very difficult for CPS to get any information from children under these circumstances.
Again, we're talking with Scott McCowan, a retired state district judge in Texas who presided over Child Protective Services cases. And currently he's the director for the Center for Public Policy Priorities and is joining us from a studio in Austin, Texas. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation coming to you from NPR News. Let's see if we get another caller in. Tom is with us. Tom calling from Haines in Oregon.
Hello.
Hi there.
I've been a teacher for about 16 years, and I've been just amazed at the number of students that I've had who should have had the state intervene for because of the emotional abuse that they've suffered, the neglect that they've suffered, but the state's never done anything. And it seems to me that these FLDS folks in Texas have been approached because they are so far out of the norm of society. My question is, had Texas been successful, or if they are ultimately successful, what ramifications might that mean for other groups in the future who are somewhat out of the norm? Say, Muslim groups, just because they're not Christian, or other groups, just because they're not what we think is normal. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay,
thank you.
Tom, thank you. And that's I guess that's a pretty good question, Scott McCowan.
It is a good question. And I just want to point out, though, that I think if this compound had been simply a polygamous compound, the state wouldn't have acted. One thing people have asked is, well, does CPS go into homes where there are underage girls and remove those girls when they're pregnant? And they point to a large teenage pregnancy rate and say no. Well, in fact, if they're pregnant by their caregiver, if their parents have been complicit in their pregnancy, then the answer is yes. I mean, there's lots of girls in CPS custody who were victims of incest or have parents that were complicit in failing to protect them, and CPS removes them. So the trigger event here for CPS was the protection of the girls, not the polygamy. And I think it goes back to something that the reporter said at the top of the hour when he was talking about Warren Jeffs, the prophet of this particular group, and his father, and the spokesperson saying you don't punish the many for the mistakes of the few. But the problem here was that it was the leadership that had adopted this policy and could say to a member of this particular group, your 14-year-old daughter is going to marry this older man, and make that happen. And in fact, that's why Warren Jeffs is in a Utah penitentiary today. And so the idea was that the girls were all at risk because the leadership and the sect itself had this tenet. It was not simply about the polygamy.
So, again, even though you're saying polygamy is a felony in the state of Texas, they're not being investigated for that.
Well, I don't know what they're being investigated for at the present time because the criminal investigation is proceeding on a separate track and isn't public. But generally, I can't recall any polygamy prosecutions. And if you look at Utah and Arizona, where you have large polygamous communities, mm-hmm. You have the same issue, that what the public authorities there try to do is to protect the teenage girls. They don't try to target the polygamy.
So as we look ahead to the other groups that might have been involved in terms of the question we had from the caller a minute ago, you don't think that this is going to set a precedent?
No. Because, again, the issue was protecting the girls.
Scott McCowan, thanks very much. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Scott McCowan, a retired state district judge in Texas, currently the director for the Center for Public Policy Priorities, and he was with us today from the studios of Digital Domain in Austin, Texas. Coming up, we'll read from your letters about transracial adoption and that infamous Sex in the City segment, plus a former Major League Baseball player tells us the unwritten rules of the bench clearing brawl. That's right, Doug Glanville will join us. He's now writing columns for the New York Times explaining what it is and what happens when that ball whizzes past your head and just for a moment, the batter decides to go ahead and charge the mound. Stay with us. If you'd like to get in on that conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.